Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Welcome to the Voices of Courage show. I have a question for you. What are the Rolling Stones, Bob Marley, AC/DC, Blondie, and many other musical groups have in common? Well, I'm going to tell you what it is. It's they've all been photographed by my guest today. So this is going to be an amazing show. You know, history is such an important part of our world, of our culture. If we understand history, if we understand how it impacts us, especially rock and roll. You know, rock and roll, I believe, out of all the music, at least in the last 40 years, 50 years, has really impacted us in many conscious and subconscious ways. And the reason I bring that up is because it's important to understand what's come before. It's important to understand what's in your mind, what images you've seen, you know, for better or not, right? And, you know, are any of those images moving you forward, inspiring greatness in you? And, you know, maybe you haven't revisited that for a while. You know, what I've learned over the years is that photography is so important because in a photograph, it captures the essence, the resonance, the vibration, the frequency of that moment in time. And there's no better person that captures that than my guest, quite frankly, that captures that essence of what was happening in the world of rock and roll and how that essence, you know, when you see that image, how it impacts us, how it moves our heart, moves our energy, and moves us into greater ways of showing up ourselves, right? I think one thing that I sure got out of rock and roll myself and the legends of rock and roll is they did inspire greatness in me. I wanted to be like some of them, right? I wanted to step up and expand myself in greater ways to be part of this amazing thing we call life. And as you've heard on some of my other shows, you know, I'm a study quantum physics and quantum mechanics and, you know, and things like that, you know. And what I've found is we are part of this beautiful, amazing field, but we are the field. We are the field and we're in this field. And we are co-creating this beautiful life. And no better way to create a life than to have people that we model, images that we can see every day and go, wow, this inspires greatness in me. I'm going to step into the next level. So today, as on the Voices of Courage, we're going to explore the man behind the camera who has photographed some of the most famous superstars in our world. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, he'll be right here with us.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'm thrilled, excited to have my guest today, Steve Joster. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, glad to be here.
For those of you who don't know Steve, you know, he's an award-winning photographer. He's an artist, and he reflects the artistry, really, of our time. As a student in England, Steve was influenced by pop art and the impact of photography on a generation that grew up with David Bailey and the blow up in the 1970s and 80s. His work with the Rolling Stones, Bob Marley, Sting, AC/DC, Pink Floyd, Neil Young, Queen, The Clash, and others established him as the leading photographer of rock artists in their live performances. For more than a decade, Steve has documented the raw energy and galvanized a generation of music fans. This is for a decade, many decades. And impacted our culture. So, Steve, it's great to have you. You've been doing this for a while, right?
Decades, you know, but yeah. Well, it was mainly because I did most of my rock and roll shooting in mid-early 70s to mid-80s. And then I changed course with my photography.
Yeah.
But in that time, yeah, I photographed most of the greats in their prime, you know, and I think that's the what people respond to now. You know, as we've all got older, they look at the photographs and it takes them back to when we were all, you know, at our prime. Well, I don't know about that physically, probably, but
Yeah, I don't know about that either, because I think I'm more of my prime mentally.
I
was back then.
Yeah, I rethought that as soon as I said it, but
I hear you, man. Well, you know, we'll start with the that you're famous for, but then we'll move into the, you know, what you're doing today. But you know, I'm just curious, like, as a young man, how you, like, where did that spark come from to go, you know, I think I'm just going to go film the Rolling Stones. Like, where did that come from?
It was as easy as that, you know. It was the whole idea of the photography part. A big influence on it was the movie Blow Up. You know, I watched that Antonioni's movie. And what you said about expanding into your life was that was a moment where you said, wow, you know, you can do that. It wasn't quite as easy as it looked on the movie, but it did give me the spark to say, you know, do something that you'd love to do. And where I came from in England, and at the time, I was born in the northeast of England, which is a very kind of working class area where people are kind of set. You know, you're born into, in England at the time, there was there still is, a class system that was so established. You know, you're born into a certain level. That's where you're expected to stay and work your life through. And there were things going on at that time that just kind of made you question it, which was an interesting time. And you saw things that changed the whole idea of a future. You know, there were working class guys with funny accents that were becoming megastars. It wasn't just, you know, Queen's English.
The Beatles, the Kinks, they had a profound influence.
From
Eric Burdon and the Animals, yeah.
Nobody knew what they were talking about. The Newcastle accent is...
you're talking about the House of the Rising Sun. I'm still wondering what that is, you know?
Yeah. But, it was a time of, you know, you talk about a social revolution. It really was.
Yeah. But, you know, I think one of the things that I know for me, like I talked in the monologue, it inspired greatness in me. It inspired me to do some things that were out of the box that I think like you too, like to, you know, you like the camera, you're starting to get used to it. You know, what was the first concert that were the first star that you photographed? Do you remember?
No, I started off. I love the music. So the idea of getting a camera and working in it seemed like a natural step. And it started off with, you know, just going to local bars and photographing. There was a lot of live music, you know, just local guys playing. And some of them made it, some of them didn't. But it was a vibrant kind of community. And that's how I got started. I loved listening to it. So recording it visually was a natural step.
Well, you know, you hear the, you know, I hear people say, you know, just find what you love and go do it, and the money will follow. Did that happen for you, or like, you know, what happened with that?
It was interesting. Yeah. At the time, there wasn't the huge outlet for visuals that there are now. You know, it was in the music business. It was before merchandising, where people were putting images on everything and selling it. At the time, you sold it basically to magazines, record companies for posters or album sleeves. You certainly weren't in it for the money, you know, but it seemed you could make enough, and it seemed like a pretty good way of living.
Did anybody teach you how to be an entrepreneur? Was that one? That wasn't in your family, or was it?
No, not at all. Yeah. No, I mean, I left home very early. I mean, I've got a daughter now, and the age that I left, it scares me just thinking of it. You know, when I saw what she was like at that age, it was just that there was a kind of wanderlust. You know, you wanted to get up, you wanted to get out. There was TV. I mean, I'm talking about the late 60s. So having access to TV and movies gave you a view of things that, you know, just the generation before didn't have. They were basically, they were coming out of the Second World War. They wanted stability. And that was the next generation. They wanted to be stable. They wanted to be quiet, have a family. And then I was the next generation that came along, that came out of that, and were exposed to, you know, all of these new things. And the pendulum swung again.
Yeah. The pendulum did swing, and it swung into this, let's do something different. You know, I remember, you know, it was a rebellion. It was a rebellion from, yeah. Maybe not in a good sense from our parents' point of view. They're like you said, they like security. Right. We just got out of war. Hey, guys, slow down, calm down. And now rock and roll's here, right? And now Steve's out there. I like the music. Let me take some photography. I think it's fascinating that part of how you evolved, you know, and it, by capturing the energy on film of what was going on out there. How did you evolve through that?
It was literally just through every time. You got to remember, we were shooting film at the time. Yeah. So there was an excitement at seeing the film being developed and seeing the images. It wasn't instant. You couldn't look at it and go, oh, that's good. Yeah, I'll keep that one. So there was the energy of shooting, and then just this high of seeing what you caught on film, which fed, you know, it fed into the excitement of it. It was, you know, it was a whole different time, and things weren't instant.
Yeah.
You know, there was a build to it. There was a rhythm to it. And I certainly wasn't in it thinking about, wow, I'm going to get rich doing this.
Yeah.
You know, it was just an emotional need almost, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because when I look at powerful photography that captures an image, there is an energy, there's an essence. I would say you capture the soul of the moment. And when we come back from the break, I want you to talk a little bit about that. I mean, a lot of people can catch images. You can shoot, and all this, but are you capturing the soul of the moment? So we'll be right back. And then, Steve, I want to talk to you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Imagine, this is your money, and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money, and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash, and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call. So please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'm speaking with photographer Steve Joster. He's most well known for capturing the rock and roll era on film and some of the most prolific bands in the world. Steve, you know, like I said before the break, you know, anybody can take a photograph, right? You got a digital camera, you can take, you know, I don't know, click, 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 you know. But to really capture those, that essence, that moment, that one that moves people, what's involved with that? Is it just by accident, or is it something that's planned out, or maybe both? I don't know. What happens?
It's planned in as much as there's preparation to make sure that you're ready to capture it. The rest of it is just absolute. Kind of, I did it by following the music. I figured, you know, there's crescendos in music, and at high points, it's the odds are that it's going to be an impactful visual, because it's at the crescent of the music. So I followed that, and I was just ready at the peaks to just pop and. That's how I found a rhythm to it and caught it, and that's how I got the images.
I love that. Well, I think you're giving us a philosophy for life, quite frankly. I mean, it's like prepare, follow the music, and then be ready for the peaks.
Yeah.
And to experience the world and happiness. Yeah.
And that's why I used to love shooting live. I wasn't that interested in doing sessions with them, because they weren't particularly, unless it was a great idea that everybody had come up with, they weren't interested in doing sessions because it cut into the free time, you know, so there was a bit of an attitude to it. But live, that's what they do. That's who these people that are usually, you know, they're pretty normal people. But they've created this energy and this persona that on stage, it pops. And
then it was amplified by the amplifiers, right?
Yeah. And also you've got this incredible lighting. You've got the sound that just generates the energy. And you got, which was very important, you got the energy from the crowd. Which is a feed back and forth. And they respond to the crowd's energy as much as the crowd responds to their performance. And that is another secret to, you know, capturing those images. You know that the energy coming from the crowd that they are responding to. So it's a two-way street and a good performance.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always seen it as almost the symbol of infinity, where, you know, the musicians start and that energy goes out to the crowd, and then it just comes back in, swirls around, comes back into the musician, goes out to the crowd, back in. You know, it's a dance.
Right? Yeah,
just somewhere in the middle of that dance, you're shooting. You're going, here it is, boom, boom, boom. How do you pick the image? How do you pick those images that you have photographed? that have become the classics in a defined, the music of the past? How do you know which one to pick?
They kind of jump out at you. You know, you're looking through a strip of film, and the first time I always like to look very quickly, just go down the thing and find what jumps out at me.
Yeah.
You often find really good ones going back and looking carefully, but you know, the first run, they're the ones that are usually obviously good.
Now, is that the same digitally? Is the same thing you're doing digitally today?
No. I don't shoot that much now. I'm more interested in doing the mixed media things now. Digitally is different because, you know, it's immediate. You can erase. The camera back then was completely manual. As I was shooting, I had to set the timer, the aperture, the focus, you know, three things to do. That was my instrument. And, you've got to learn, you've got lighting that's constantly changing. Different color lights have different wavelengths, which need different exposures. And you're trying to capture somebody who's just, a frenetic mover like Jagger or somebody. There's a lot of things going on. It's a lot of focus, as well as actually the camera focus. But you mentally, you got to be, on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your latest exhibit, okay, it's called Stripped, Music That Changed the World, serves both as an art show and a time capsule. What stories or themes do you think you hope to convey through this collection, and where can people see the collection?
Well, the collection, the show has just closed. The work is still available on my website and at the White Room Gallery and at Morrison Hotel Gallery. You can still buy the pieces.
Yeah, and that's in New York, correct?
Well, Morrison, they're all online. So it's
all online, okay.
And Morrison has got physical galleries in New York and L.A. They're in the Sunset Marquee in L.A. and on Prince Street in New York. But at the show, what struck me was the number of people that kind of came up and said this means so much to them because it's what they grew up with, or it's what they'd heard about. And to see, if you see the Stones or Neil Young now, it's a very different vibe to seeing them back in the 70s.
Right.
You know, it's as Joe Walsh said, it was a lot more fun being 20 in the 70s than being 70 in the 20s. So, it took them back and it just relived the energy and the power of rock in that time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that time moved people. It really did. Why do you think that was?
Because it was new, and it really was just like a kind of a finger to authority. You know, that was, I know in England was a very kind of repressive. They wanted to keep everything in its place. You know, where they knew how to handle everything. And it, rock and roll and other things at the time, literature, movies, everything was changing. And it was young people driving it. And for once, they were at the wheel. And, you know, it was a new situation. And in the movies, just development of smaller cameras was huge, in as much as you could take them out on the street and shoot. And it took the power that the studios had out of their hands. I mean, before that, the studios controlled pretty much most of the movies on movie sets. Now younger people could go out in the streets and they didn't need the sets, they could shoot. So there were, a lot of things were changing at the time. It wasn't, you know, wasn't just music.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have some favorites that you captured? Some the I'm sure you do. What you know, some of your favorite images that you know you captured over the years?
Well, definitely a lot of the Stones images, Bob Marley. You know, it was the music at that time that I loved. That Queen. I got some great stuff. You know, that with Queen. A lot of them, Van Halen. I mean, visually, that was a treat. You know, it was. Yeah. And there were a lot of great bands that didn't make it to the same level as the ones I mentioned, you know, but they were pretty big, but Little Feat, oh, yeah. Fabulous band, Lynyrd Skynyrd. I mean, the energy at those shows was just amazing. And the musicianship. I mean, Lowell George as a slide guitar player was pretty much, you know, out there on his own. There was a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of reasons for different images. And I've got a lot of them that I'm very fond of.
Nice, nice. Are they in your personal collection or are they out there in some of the,
Both. I mean, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. My collection is massive. you know, but yeah, there's a lot out there. And go to the site, take a look, and take the trip.
You know, when you were starting out, were you in the audience clicking, or were you, you know, how did you get close to some of these, you know, people that are now, you know, they were super.
Well, at the very beginning, when you're in the pub, you know, you're just sitting there having a few drinks, shooting and stuff. And then it was a pretty small world. You'd take the images down to a record company and show it to the PR people, and if they liked them, then the next time the band was in town, you'd get like a photo pass to the show, and you'd be in what, you know, the pit, which was a protected area right in front of the stage for us to work in. And then later on, as they got, you know, the bands got to know your work, then you'd be invited out with them, maybe go out on the road, and or just taken to some cities and work with them. So it moved pretty quickly. But yeah, when you're shooting, you know, after the initial short time, you got good access. You got backstage access, which, you know, that didn't interest me that much. But the being in the pit, yeah, where you really, really kind of just focus on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. All right, listen, I got to take a break. You know, I'm a lot of questions going on in my head, right? So, you know, I can find a way to get back and talk about some of the immortalized legends, like, you know, Bob Marley and the Stones and Stevie Nicks, and maybe some of the moments that were really captured, you know, in your mind and maybe even on film. So we'll be right back. We'll talk about that.
Hi everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Well, Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Fustro. I'll be right back with my guest, Steve Juster, in just a second here. I wanted to mention to you that if you haven't already, please go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can subscribe to us at youtube.com/TheCourageNetwork, youtube.com/TheCourageNetwork. And if you do, you'll not only be able to get the shows every week and not miss a show, you'll also be able to pass those on to people that you care about to help inspire greatness within them. So we hope you'll do that very soon. YouTube.com/TheCourageNetwork. Steve, all right, back. Love this interview. Love what we're doing here. You photograph the greats to become great. Isn't that interesting? You know? You hung around their energy, you got captured them on film, and now you've been well known, around the world for your photography. It's amazing.
Right place, right time, Blink.
What's that?
The right place, the right time. That was
at the right time. I always think there's principles that come out of these shows, and one of it, if you want to be great, hang around with the greats. Find out what they're doing. Be of service to them. In some way or another, which I think you were.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for the images, who knows? Obviously the music would be remembered, but it means a lot, I think, to people to be able to see. It takes them back. It's a kind of visual, revisit to the youth as opposed to just listening to the music. I mean, the music is the main thing, but, obviously.
I remember the music that would always, I kind of timestamp it in my head. Like, I dated this girl at this time, and that music reminds me of this. I went to college at this time, that music reminds me of this. I started a new business, that music reminds me of this. Yeah. I think we all kind of have that at some way or another. Right,
it's the soundtrack to your life. You can put where you were at the time to most things.
Yeah. Oh, I love what you just said. The soundtrack to my life. Yeah, that's brilliant. So the soundtrack of your life. Anything that really stood out for you? Any special moments that you go, wow, I remember this.
Well. I'll tell you, one of the main moments was led to kind of music connections, but it was photographing the riots in 76. That was something that stood out because it changed. It was a kind of swerve in my life. But musically, I don't know. It's when we talk about it, it sounds... all photographing these bands, it was work.
Yeah.
And it was a job that you had to do. You had to be prepared for, do it because you only got one shot, and you didn't want to mess up because you might not get a second chance at it. So it was work, and it was rewarding in as much as you weren't going into a factory, but it was, you still had to approach it with a professional approach. Yeah. So one of the things standing out more than another, that's why it's hard to answer that question, because every one was something that, you had to prepare in the same way for.
Did you, David Bowie comes to mind. Did you ever work with David Bowie at all?
No. Mick Rock worked with Bowie a lot. He kind of cornered that area.
Yeah.
But no, visually he was amazing.
It was amazing visually. Yeah. Well, so was Queen though. I mean, Queen was amazing. Yeah.
Oh, Freddie was humble, and he was a lovely guy, and it's strange now when you look at their music, how they became what they did, because it's not really like rock and roll. It's a strange mix of this theatrical, operatic,
classical.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's an interesting mix that people responded in the way they did.
Yeah. You know, any insights on how they became who they became? I mean, you know, that's very interesting.
No, because especially when you look at that time and punk was, you know, just becoming so big. It was just the antithesis of that, you know, it was.
Right.
Which might have been, you know, part of the reason it was just such a.
Yeah.
Such a different sound.
Yeah. 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 Where did you find yourself having certain groups that, you know, or even individuals in the groups that were kind of mentoring you or guiding you or inspiring you? What was that for you at that time?
Not really. No. I mean, you had to kind of remain separate in a way to just record what you wanted to record. I mean, I was friendly, you know, I met with and traveled with people, and you became friends while you were out on the road, you know, how it is when you're traveling and then everybody goes their own way. But no, it was nobody that really kind of mentored. There were certain people that you looked at and you saw the work they put into doing something that just looked like a spontaneous show. And you looked at those people and you saw the work and the planning and the, you know, what they put into it. And that was kind of a lesson in how you approached your part of it. You know, you couldn't take it as, oh, this is a wild time, you know, of all the drugs and the women that were around, you know, you just get, it's work. And there were lessons to be learned, that's for sure.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you know, it's I'm down here in you know, the Southern California area, and they have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that I believe is going to be coming up in November, indoctrinating a bunch of it's the California, I think it's California Music Hall of Fame. So it's anyway, that's coming up. You I don't know if you're going to be there or not, or even you know about it, but
what date you have?
I'll have to get back with you on it, but yeah, it's in November, and it's over, I believe, somewhere around Warner Brothers Studios over there.
Oh,
so I'll let you know about it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I'll be there. So, you know, it could be a nice time for us to meet in person.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I would too. Well, listen, I'm going to take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk about your experience with Marvin Gaye, because I know that he invited you to do some stuff. And
yeah,
I could take a little deep dive into that. And also, I want to get current with you. I want to know what you're doing currently and what we can see some of the artwork. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology, many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. We're talking to Steve Joster. The name of our show today is The Courage to Capture Rock and Roll History, and he's done it in spades. Marvin Gaye, Steve, you know, he personally invited you to do some work with him. What's your experience with that? What's the story around that?
Well, that came from, again, being in the right or wrong place at the right time. I was caught in the middle of the Notting Hill Gate riots, which was, it was a West Indian festival in Notting Hill Gate, Ladbroke Grove. It was an annual event that, quite honestly, the police were trying to stop. And they decided that year, I think it was 76, that they were going to do a big crackdown on it. And they were out in force. And this whole riot started. And I happened to be in the middle of it with a camera. And I started photographing it. And it ended up on the front page of all the newspapers in London. And it's a whole other story. Maybe, you know, I'll discuss the rest of it another time, maybe. But at the time, it got a lot of coverage because it was supposedly the police had created a situation where they could attack the crowd, which they did. And it was a political scandal. It was a big story. And then after it, because of my shots in the papers, Marvin Gaye's people called and said, hey, he's going to be in town. Would you take him around Notting Hill Gate and, you know, just talk about the riots and what happened? And so we met up at his hotel and we went down to Notting Hill Gate. He was so protected by all of these people. There wasn't a lot of chatting. We talked a bit, but we were photographing. And we'd go into a youth club. I've got pictures of him in his white suit playing ping pong with these little, you know, Jamaican kids. I've got some amazing images. And then he said, well, I'm playing the Royal Albert Hall on the weekend. Do you want to come down and shoot that? So, you know, that was an offer you couldn't refuse.
Wow.
So I went down and shot that. And it was interesting, the show I just did. I found the film again. I've got so much film. And this kind of got lost in a box somewhere, and I found it. And there were a lot of incredible images of him performing. And he wasn't fond of being photographed live. So I was very lucky to get that invite and be able to do it. And in the show, it was just, I did this huge print of a contact sheet of him live. And that was pretty amazing. It was quite an experience. He is an incredible performer. And it's just a sad personal story of how his life ended up. But amazing, amazing performer.
Well, he brought a lot of joy and with his music to a lot of people, you know. And, I know he was, what his most famous songs, probably What's Going On, Sexual Healing. I remember those. And, he's just an amazing man. How would you say this impacted your career as a result of working with him?
Not as much as the riots, that's for sure. It was, I mean, just personally, it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get to do that every day. And he was a guy that, you know, it was more than music. Politically, racially, he was active in every field.
Yeah.
You know, wanted to change things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, he brought attention, of course, also to domestic violence, through his tragic passing. I think it, you know, brought more awareness to, you know, this can happen to anybody, anywhere, you know.
Yeah, it is always amazing to see the public and private personas, you know, especially when they clash like that. I mean,
yeah. Tell me, where are you now, man? What are you doing these days? What's happening with your art, your music? You know, we put on the screen a little bit ago where people can get a hold of you, you know, at stevejoester.com, J-O-E-S-T-E-R. Is that right? That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me what you're doing now.
Well, I spend a lot of my time. I've got a house out east in Bridgehampton, and I built a studio there. And I'm in there working away with my mixed media and painting, and I shoot some projects, some ideas that I want to do, but mainly I'm doing that, which is a very different...
Jeff, tell me a little bit about mixed media. What is that when you're doing mixed media? How are you doing it? What are you doing with mixed media when you say that?
Well, some of the mixed media that was in this last show were involved some of my rock and roll imagery. I do these huge prints and paint with and around with them, just trying to generate, you know, the kind of excitement that I got from the shows in a visual, you know, a visual format. Some of the painting has nothing to do with the music. It's just, you know, I started off painting in the very beginning. And it's interesting, a kind of cyclical thing is happening where I'm going back to, you know, the beginning, which was a subject of some of my paintings. I was reading a book called Einstein's Dreams, where he believed time was cyclical, and if there was enough of it, we'd go back to the beginning. Apparently he found a slight curve in time, which led him to believe that, you know, it's enough time, there'd be a circle. So I started doing work with circles, black circles on white, which, you know, kind of went back to the beginning of the 60s with op art.
Yeah,
it was an interest. It didn't even strike me until after I'd finished and was looking at it, and I remember.
I love it, Steve. Well, listen, I'm actually out of time. This interview just went like this. I was like, look at our time. You know, one of the things you've done, I believe, is, you know, through your work and what we talked about today, is inspire greatness in others. You know, as you stepped in and stepped out in the unknown, and the courage to go film people that, you know, sometimes were known, sometimes weren't at the time, but stepping into that, your own brilliance. So thank you.
It was following a passion, you know, and I kind of, you can't encourage people to do that enough. You know, find something you love and go after it, and it'll pay in many ways, not always financially, but, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. And I'm going to leave us on this note. Find images of greatness and put them around you. They have energy, they have frequency, they have vibration in those photographs, in those paintings.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you know, you'll feel that. You'll be inspired. I guarantee it. So I hope you do that. Steve, thank you again so much for being here.
And it was a pleasure. Yeah.
My pleasure. Very much so. All right. And I want to thank all of you for being here. And remember to continue to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and you will also be able to do the impossible.